Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, and Department of Veteran Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now the host of Minnesota Military Radio Hour, Tom Lyons.
Welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'm Tom Lyons. In today's show, we talk with Major Paul Rickard from Minnesota's 1st Brigade of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division about the upcoming deployment of 2,400 Minnesotans. And we take a look at the Fisher House and their work to support our wounded veterans and their families. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This week begins a historic deployment of the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team to Kuwait for duty in support of Operation New Dawn. All this week and next, cities across Minnesota will recognize and honor their hometown heroes with deployment ceremonies. This is truly a history-making moment, as it is the second largest deployment of our Minnesota National Guard soldiers since World War II. It is also noteworthy that this historic deployment also falls on the 150th anniversary of the first muster of the Minnesota troops in service to our nation. In 1861, Minnesota was the first state to heed Abraham Lincoln's call for troops to fight in the war between the states. As fate would have it, Minnesota Governor Alexander Ramsey was in Washington at that time of President Lincoln's call. He told the president he could raise an infantry regiment of 1,000 soldiers from Minnesota. Thus, the first Minnesota volunteers were organized at Fort Snelling, Minnesota. From 150 years ago to today, the soldiers of the Minnesota National Guard have stood ready to serve and defend. Whether we are protecting our communities from flooding, providing disaster relief following a tornado, or fighting our nation's wars, the mission of the Minnesota National Guard remains the same, namely, to provide a competent and ready force who are able to serve, protect, and defend when called upon to do so by our governor or the president. The 1st Brigade Combat Team draws its lineage to those brave men who fought during the Civil War at such historic battles as Bull Run, Chancellorsville, and Gettysburg. Recently, the 1st Brigade Combat Team made history once more while deployed to Iraq from 2006 to 2007. Expecting to return home after an 18-month tour, the 1st Brigade was ordered to stay an additional 4 months in Iraq in order to provide security and support during an operation that would later be known as the Surge. This extension would give the 1st Brigade Combat Team the distinction of being the longest-serving brigade combat team in Iraq, serving longer than any other National Guard, Army Reserve, or active duty brigade. It is with a great deal of pride and honor that I bid farewell to this newest generation of warriors from the 1st Brigade Combat Team. Their commanding officer, Colonel Eric Kurska, and his entire command team are the right leaders at the right time in the right place. They are well-trained, well-equipped, and well-led, and will do their fellow Minnesotans proud, as their brothers in arms did 150 years ago. I salute them and all the soldiers and airmen of the Minnesota National Guard who continue to serve their state and nation with great distinction.
Thank you, General Nash. You can link to the Adjutant General's blog, Facebook, and Twitter feed through Minnesota National Guard/generally speaking. This week, Major Paul Rickard joins us. He is the Public Affairs Officer of the 1st Brigade of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. Major Rickard, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Major, I understand you've been in the military for quite some time and deployed a couple of times. Can you tell us about your career?
Sure. I think I'm going on 14 years now in June. I actually started out on active duty. I went straight out of college. I was a communications major and joined the Army to see the world, and they sent me to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, where I stayed as an artillery officer for 3 years, and got out at that time and decided that maybe active duty life wasn't for me, and went down to Texas and did some civilian work. Unfortunately, 9/11 occurred, and I had stayed in the Guard. The military was still something I enjoyed, but I was deployed in support of protecting the bases. So I was deployed to Fort Sam Houston for a year, and that was an interesting deployment. After I got off of that, I was looking for work, came up here to Minnesota, joined the Minnesota Guard, which was a fantastic experience. I had actually planned to get out of the military entirely after what I owed was done. But the Minnesota Guard was such a professional organization, and I had so much fun working with the guys I stayed in. And since then, I deployed with the brigade again for the deployment in 2005 to 2007. That was quite an interesting tour, as many people know. And I also mobilized in support of the recent division deployment. For that deployment, though, I was able to stay home and work in the rear to support Soldiers Forward. And now I'm deploying a fourth time, and this time I'll be going overseas again to Iraq. I'm looking forward to it, see the changes and how far we've come from when I was there in 2005, or 6, excuse me.
And now, sir, you're the public affairs officer of the 1st Brigade?
I am. It's interesting. When I was over in Iraq the last time, I was working with the 125 Field Artillery, and part of my additional duties was the unit public affairs officer. So I did things such as create newsletters for the families, and I was working under then Major Lapgard, who was the brigade public affairs officer, was in charge of the whole brigade. I enjoyed that so much when I got back. I started doing that on the military side full time, became a public affairs officer, qualified, did the training, and now I'm doing that same thing that I did for one battalion for an entire brigade. It's a lot of responsibility.
Now, the 1st Brigade's been training for quite some time for this deployment, for this large deployment, and now we have 2,400 Minnesotans preparing to deploy shortly.
That's correct. We've already started. You say we've been training for a long time, and that is true. We've known of the possibility of a deployment for 2 years, and then, of course, last year we announced that we had been notified of possible deployment, so that it was a little bit more solid at that point. And so we oriented our training to best prepare our soldiers for a wide variety of missions. And as the mission became clearer to us that we'd be doing convoy security and base security in Iraq and Kuwait, we focused on that. And now we've started our annual training. We started that on May 9th. So we have all the battalions on the ground now in Camp Ripley, and pretty soon we'll be. Getting ready to transition onto active duty at Fort McCoy and get ready to start our year-long deployment.
The major of these National Guard troops, the 34th Infantry Red Bull, come from all over the state?
They do. 530 communities across the state. So many, many, many communities are affected. It's not just consolidated in the metro area. It's as far north as Fargo and getting down to the southern border towards Iowa. It's a lot of people that are affected by this deployment.
So these are from armories or units all over the state?
That's correct. There is actually 27 communities that have armories within them, and that's where these units are based. But 530 communities are affected because 530 soldiers are spread throughout the state.
So this virtually, we've got people leaving from every county.
I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but pretty much every single county that I'm aware of. Just looking at my hometowns here, St. Paul, Duluth, St. Cloud, Mankato, but then you get to smaller Blaine, Elk River, Cloquet, Anoka, Fargo. Fargo, of course, is in North Dakota, but we even have soldiers from other states. That live in other states but actually are part of the Minnesota Guard, which only tells of the professionalism of this organization that people, even though they live outside the state, want to work with us.
Major, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about where those troops come from and about preparing for this large deployment. We'll continue our conversation with Major Paul Rickert after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking to Major Paul Rickert, the Public Affairs Officer of the 1st Brigade of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. Major, I understand that for this deployment, you've been able to do a lot of your training at Camp Ripley, and shortly you're going to be going over to Fort McCoy. Can you tell us what type of preparations are being undertaken?
Sure. I talked a little bit about how we have known about this for a little while, and that allowed us to really focus our training and prepare us And because we knew what we were going to be doing, we were able to put that training into our training plan throughout the year. So we've been working on putting together convoys, preparing teams to work together in the Humvees and Cayman vehicles that we'll be using overseas, and just doing our basic warrior skills, so medical skills, infantry patrol skills, and even the weapons training with our rifles and pistols, and getting all that stuff taken care of, so that once we transition to Fort McCoy, which we'll be doing here within the next week, we will actually be then focusing on the larger drills, so working together as a company and battalion to do those larger missions. And we'll be verified by actual Army Department of Defense people at Fort McCoy. And once they feel that we've accomplished the task to standard, we will move into Kuwait to do our actual mission.
Major, the 1st Brigade has an impressive lineage going back to the Civil War, as we heard from General Dash. And you've got a ceremony, a departure ceremony, coming up today.
That's correct. At 11 o'clock today at historic Fort Snelling, we'll be doing the brigade's official departure ceremony. We've got 200 soldiers there to represent the brigade from various battalions, and the battalion commanders will also be there. We had hoped to get the entire brigade together for a send-off, but because we're trying to get as much training done as possible before going to Fort McCoy, we weren't able to get the entire 2,400 soldiers in one place. But we do invite the public to come and see us and see us off. The governor will be there, as well as the adjutant general, Major General Nash, and several other federal representatives. And it's going to be an amazing event.
Major, joining us right now is Jim Moffitt, Chairman of the Board of the 1st Minnesota Regiment of Volunteer Infantry Reenactors. Mr. Yeah. Moffitt, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you very much.
Mr. Moffitt, you're taking part in this ceremony today?
Yes. We will be providing a color guard that will be carrying the reproduction colors, both the national colors and the regimental colors of the 1st Minnesota Volunteer Infantry, which was the first regiment of volunteers raised in the United States Army for the Civil War. They got started in April of 1861 and had a most distinguished record in their 3 years of service. So since we're celebrating the sesquicentennial of the beginning of the Civil War last month, in April 12th was when Fort Sumter was bombarded in 1861, the 1st Minnesota Volunteers left in June for the seat of war, at the time Washington, in preparation for the Battle of Bull Run. And now, 150 years later, with the 1st Brigade deploying again, it seems to be most fitting to have the ceremony at historic Fort Snelling and to have our organization as part of a commemoration of the historical nature of this deployment and other deployments that Minnesota has made over the 150 years.
Now, this ceremony is going to be open to the public today?
Yes, it will.
And we'd encourage as many of them to come out and watch as possible. Can you walk us through quickly what's going to take place?
There'll be the ceremony will begin when, after the dignitaries have come in, the colors will be presented. There'll be an invocation. A couple of speeches will be given by various dignitaries, governors, senators, officers in the military, and then the part that our unit will be primarily involved in will be a ceremonial presentation of our national colors from our color sergeant to the commander of the 1st Brigade. And as I understand it, he will then pass them to the command sergeant major of the brigade. And if they, some things never change in the military. At that point, the colors should be given to the color sergeant. And it was his responsibility during the war to make sure that nothing ill happened to the colors, and we would expect that the same thing would happen in this case. A number of color sergeants of the 1st Minnesota were wounded in combat. And as you can well imagine, the flag of a regiment was a prominent feature and an easy thing for the enemy to lay a bead on. And Sam Bloomer from Stillwater was wounded at the Battle of Antietam. And in fact, when the regiment was forced to fall back, he found himself with a hole through his leg. His knee had his leg would eventually be amputated. He found himself with the colors alone and took them off of the staff, stuffed them inside of his vest, buttoned his coat back up, and chucked the staff as far as he could, so that when the Confederates came up, they offered him a canteen of water, then kneed him up against a tree. They made him comfortable. The battle continued on. The next day, when the regiment came back to the area where they had been fighting, they found Color Sergeant Bloomer, and he still had those colors in his possession.
Mr. Moffat, how many reenactors will you have at the ceremony today?
It's hard to tell, but I think the first sergeant told me he was looking at between 15 and 20.
Major Rickard, sounds like quite a ceremony coming up today, and what a significant event 150 years later.
It's certainly significant, and it's not lost. The historical significance is not lost on the soldiers of the 1st Brigade. The transfer of the colors will be have quite an impact on those of us who are going forward, and so we're very grateful that the 1st Minnesota was able to attend with us as well.
And Major, I'm sure you've taken part in a number of these departure and welcome home ceremonies, but I'm sure the Minnesota Patriot Guard there, and there'll be a lot of civilians. And,
the Patriot Guard will be there, also the New Ulm Battery, so we'll have additional reenactors in addition to just the 1st Minnesota. And I'd encourage anyone who is looking for more information, go to our Facebook site, which is Minnesota Red Bulls, all one word, and we've got additional information there as well.
And I'm sure that the more people that come out and send you off, the better, and the troops will feel
There's plenty of room. Because it is a historic fort, it's festival seating, which means you'll be standing or sitting on the ground. Bring a blanket or bring a chair. Please come out and see the ceremony. There'll be a lot to see, and you'll definitely enjoy it.
Major, one more time, the time and place so that people get to the right place.
The time is 11 o'clock at historic Fort Snelling. The ceremony will last approximately 45 minutes.
Great. And I hope that all of our listeners take this opportunity to go out and give the 34th Infantry a proper send-off. Major Rickard and Mr. Moffat, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Major Paul Rickard, the 1st Brigade of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, and Jim Moffat from the 1st Minnesota Regiment of Volunteer Infantry Reenactors. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Each week, we feature Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, a comprehensive program that connects service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Let's visit this week's Support Our Troops Showcase and discuss how Beyond the Yellow Ribbon communities and cities are meeting the needs of service members and their families. Sergeant Deborah William had been deployed to Iraq for 10 months before returning home to Southwest Minnesota. As her unit drove home from the airport, Deborah was left speechless at all the welcome home signs placed along the highway. Hundreds of people from Deborah's community were there to show their support when they finally arrived. Deborah's unit assembled on the armory drill floor, and the city mayor gave a welcome home speech. Afterwards, restaurants offered discounted services for reunited families to grab a bite to eat. Deborah later discovered that all the signs along the highway were donated by her civilian employer and placed by local volunteers. This touching day was planned and coordinated by the community's Yellow Ribbon Network. Since the Yellow Ribbon Recognition Program began, over 45 entities have been proclaimed Yellow Ribbon. Whether it's a Yellow Ribbon city, community, or business, networks have been formed throughout Minnesota to embrace those affected by military deployments. Thank you, Yellow Ribbon entities, for showcasing how remarkable cities, communities, and businesses are going beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is a comprehensive program that creates awareness for the purpose of connecting service members and their families with community support, training, services, and resources. Beyond the Ribbon connects and coordinates organizations, agencies, and companies to provide resources and support service members and their families. And it is united to bring service members all the way home. To learn how you can make a difference in the life of a service member, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. When we return, we'll take a look at the Fisher House with Marge Oslin. That's right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Lyons. It's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
Good morning. I want to take a few minutes to share a poem written years ago by one of our very own employees at the Minneapolis Veterans Home, Sean Berry. Through these words, he has captured the essence and philosophy of our state veterans' homes. I'm proud to report that Mr. Berry is still employed at the Minneapolis home. I want to thank him for his service to Minnesota veterans and their families. At the prime of their youth, many men and women left the safety of their homes to fight for the cause of freedom in distant lands. Many who served once again leave their homes, this time fighting the effects of age and illness. As they persevere to maintain their own freedom, we pledge never to forget the sacrifices that they have made in the past, to stand with them in the present, to be there in the future, serving those who serve.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. You can find out more about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs programs by calling 1-888-LINK-VET or online at minnesotaveteran.org. This week, Marge Oslin joins us. She's the house manager from the Fisher House at the Minneapolis VA Hospital. Mrs. Oslin, welcome to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
I have two quick questions for you. Number one, what is the Fisher House? And number two, what's a house manager?
Well, the Fisher House are a group of homes that the Fisher Foundation has built for the family members of active duty military, injured military, and veterans who are receiving care at either military bases or at the VA medical centers. And it's throughout the world. We presently have 54 homes completed.
All across the country.
All across the country and also in Germany. We're fortunate to be the only VA medical center in the country to have two Fisher Houses.
Now, this is the VA medical center out by the airport.
Yes, it is. It's a VA medical center. We're located. The Fisher House is actually located on the corner of Minnehaha Avenue and 54th Street in South Minneapolis.
Okay, and when was the first house opened?
In 1995. And we just opened our second house on February 7th, and we're going to be having a dedication on June 9th. And it's open to the public if they feel they would like to come and see the beautiful house.
And Marge, you're a VA employee?
Yes, I am. I've been a VA employee for 31 years, and I've enjoyed working for the veterans and helping them as much as possible as I can. And it's kind of nice in this last couple of years of my working life to be able to work on the other side of the family and to meet the families, because everyone serves when somebody goes to war. It's not only the soldier, the families go through crisis also. And so when we have patients who are there getting treatment at the VA Medical Center, it's always nice to be able to have the family members available and there for them.
So you've worked in various positions for the VA?
Yes, I have.
So it was at the hospital? Or?
Yes, at the hospital. I've only been at the Fisher House manager for about 2.5 years. And so up until that point, everything's been for the veterans, and I've enjoyed it immensely.
I understand that the Minneapolis Hospital will be the first one to receive a second house. Is that true?
Yes, it is. It's the first one out of the whole system of VA medical centers to be able to get a second one. We're one of four polytrauma centers throughout the nation. And so the other polytrauma centers are located in Richmond, in Palo Alto, in Tampa, and then ourselves.
Now, how many families can you take care of in one per house?
Well, in the first house, we have 16 beds. And in that, we can accommodate 30 people. And in the second house, we have 30 beds, and we can accommodate up to 52. So that's a total of 82 people or 82 family members that we can accommodate.
So the beds each have their own room?
If it's a family, some are queen-size rooms with a multiple, you know, with a bed. We have rooms with two beds, twin beds. You know, it's a multiple different types of beds.
So it's like a little motel kind of thing?
Exactly. And it has their own bathrooms, and we have our communal kitchen, dining room. The first Fisher House is kind of like a nice, homey bed and breakfast. the second house is like a 5-star hotel. So it's very nice, and both places are loved immensely.
Now, these families, what type of, they've got a veteran or a current member, somebody undergoing some surgery or treatment?
Right. Yes, we have multiple types of families going in. And one thing that I've noticed with the family members that come through, they become a family themselves. And it doesn't mean each family can interact with another family, be it a young soldier who just has returned from Iraq or Afghanistan, or an 89-year-old veteran. The families all can correlate or understand each other's, you know, pains and sufferings that they're going through, and they give each other comfort. So it's a great group of people.
So the commonality is the veteran over.
Exactly, exactly.
So are some of these, say, Vietnam veterans, and they're coming in for treatment, have to stay overnight, and their wife accompanies them and stays there, something
right.
like that?
Right, and most of the time, it's mostly patients who we find they come in for a short stay, especially like the Vietnam veteran era and stuff, where they'll come in for a short stay and they could end up being there for 8 months. You know, it just depends, you know, the how their husbands do. We have a family there that husband came in for open heart surgery and was there for 6 months, and now he's going home next week.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and we have the same thing with the active duty families. We have families that have been there up to a year. And so we try to do the best that we can to make them feel at home and try to make life easier for them, because the stresses that they're going through are immense. And so we try to make it comfortable.
Marge, you sound very passionate, caring, and understanding.
Well, I love my veterans and I love my families. So it's a great group of people that I owe an immense thank you.
I understand you've got a couple of Marines at home.
Yes, I do. My husband was a Marine, or excuse me, is a Marine, always a Marine.
Yep.
And so is my son. And so I'm very proud to serve the United States.
That give you something a little extra to be the house manager?
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah, it does.
Now, how busy are these Fisher houses?
Well, the first house, in 2010, we did 533 families. And that was just for the 10-room house. Right now, since we opened up the new house on February 7th, we've been full for both houses for the last 3 weeks. So we're very busy.
So if we've got Minnesota veterans coming to the VA hospital for some kind of treatment, how do they get a hold of you? How do they find out if you've got a room at the inn?
Well, they usually contact the Patient Family Center, where we have patient advocates, where I used to work. And they can get them in touch with me. There's social workers that get in touch with me. And the families sometimes know about the Fisher House and just get in touch with me. So everybody always finds out about me.
They know where to find you.
They know where to find me.
So is there a website that has photos and things they can find out about it?
Well, what they can do is they can go to the, I don't know if we've got our new Fisher House up in our website yet, but if they want to contact or look at Fisher Houses, they can contact the www.fisherhouse.org, and that can give you an overview of what the Fisher Houses look like.
Fisherhouse.org is F-I-S-C-H-E-R.
No,
Fisher
House. It's F-I-S-H-E-R.
Oh, I've got it misspelled here.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Sergeant Ben about that later.
Okay. And then if they want to contact me, I'm under a fake name. No, my real name is Mary. So my email address would be mary.osland, and that's OSLUND@VA.gov. And so they can contact me also if they need to contact me to set up a room, ask questions. I'll be available anytime.
Marge or Mary.
Or whatever.
Are there occasions when you're full and you can't accommodate everybody?
It used to be with the 10 room. I always was saying no, but since we've got the new house, I have not had to say no. We've had to do some moving around, you know, and things, but I've been pretty fortunate now that we've still been able to take everybody. So I'm hoping that in the future we don't ever have to say no.
That's great. Marge, Mary,
whatever.
We have to take a short break. We'll continue our conversation with Marge Osland after a short break. This is the Minnesota Military Radio Hour on News Talk 100.3 FM. Welcome back to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. Today we're talking to Mary Marge Osland, the house manager of the Fisher House at the Minneapolis VA Hospital. Marge, we should let people know about this Mary Marge thing one more time and how they can contact you.
Okay. Well, my nickname is Marge, but I actually am Mary Osland. And so if you want to contact me through the internet, you can go mary.osland, and that's OSLUND@VA.gov.
And how they find the fisherhouse.org, is that what it is?
Yes, it's the Fisher House is www.fisherhouse.org. org. And Fisher is spelled F-I-S-H-E-R.
Yes, ma'am. Can we, let's backtrack a little bit now. Can you tell me just a little bit about the Fisher Foundation and more about their, about what they do and how many people they serve?
Yeah, well, the Fisher Foundation started building homes back in 1990. And since that time, they have served over 12,000 families and served 3 million days of lodging for patients, families since 1990. And that's a lot of lodging. And the organization has been so wonderful to every one of the families. The Fisher Foundation is so caring and so, you know, they're thankful for the gifts that our veterans have given us, the soldiers and their families. And this is their way to say thank you.
And all of these Fisher houses are built as close to the VA hospitals as possible?
Yes, close to the VA hospitals, and they also are on the military bases. They have Fisher houses for them.
Now, how important is it for the families to be able to stay that close?
Well, I think it helps with the patient's recovery. I think it's the veteran needs to know, or the active duty soldier needs to know, that his family's near and they're safe, and that they can come and be with them every day, because it helps with their recovery. And I think that after working at the VA Medical Center for 31 years, I've been able to see the benefit of having family near to you. And it's very important. And the veterans and soldiers, there comes a time when the families are no longer needed to be there every day. But during the beginning stages of their illnesses and treatment, it's very important to have someone there that they can find a connection with.
Keep a positive attitude.
Exactly.
Patient advocate, those type of things.
You got that right.
I'm sure you've got a couple of stories in your years as house manager of things that have happened and people have stayed. Can you share some of those with us?
Well, I have one in particular family that was coming up from, I believe it was Iowa, and they their son had been so severely injured that he was unable to communicate. And the first time I met him, he was in a wheelchair. And he was just kind of like in a daze, just out of it. And a year later, when they were getting ready, the mother was getting ready to go back home, she said, "Marge, I've got somebody for you to meet." And I said, "Well, who is it?" She says, "Just come here." And so I went to the doorway, and as I was coming to the doorway, in walked her son. And he said, "Hi, Marge, I'm Joe." And it was just the most heartwarming experience. And we actually had a cry. It was really very heartwarming and very rewarding, you know, for all of us. And we also have another family that they're Green Bay Packer fans, and they have made a point of buying me Green Bay Packer items, and I'm a Viking fan. And so when the Packers won the Super Bowl, they couldn't miss to call me and rub it in. And so after that, I gave all my Packer fans to my assistant co-manager of the Fisher House, because she's a Packer fan.
Marge, I think they like to pick on you a little
bit. Yes, they do.
For our listeners, if they want to help with the Fisher House organization, the Fisher Foundation, where do they go? What do they do?
Well, they can find out more information about the foundation if they do go on the website, www.fisherhouse.org. And that can give you all the information that you need about where the homes are located, more about the program, more about the foundation. It can tell you where to make donations. If you want to make a donation directly to the Minneapolis VA Medical Center, you can make it through the foundation, but denote it as going to the Minneapolis Fisher House. We will get the funds to our area.
Do you ever have any volunteers come out and want to help you?
Yeah, I have very, very diligent volunteers. They come out and they cook meals for me, or not for me, but for the family members. And we have one guy that comes out, and he's the master of everything. He does my computers. He does everything. He fixes things. And we have a couple other ones that they come out and they cook two meals a week. This one particular vet, a volunteer, and his wife. And another comes out and they cook on the weekends. They'll cook a breakfast maybe once or twice a month. And then another one that does my gardening. You know, so I look forward to having my volunteers, because without them, it can be a little overwhelming. And I think it's very rewarding for both sides, of the families and the volunteers, to know that they're doing something for the veterans' families.
Sure. And if any of our listeners want to volunteer, they contact you at?
They can contact me. Oh, actually, they can contact the voluntary services at the VA Medical Center, and that is 612-467-2050.
Very good. We got that without even any notes.
Well, I call it enough.
Marge, you've done a great job. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, but I want to thank everyone for thinking about the Fisher Foundation and continue to think about our active duty soldiers and our veterans. They've given a lot to the service of our country.
Marge, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Marge Oslin, the house manager of the Fisher House at the Minneapolis VA Hospital. We have links to more information on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Let's take a look in the mailbag to see the listener question of the week. Joining us is Sergeant First Class Melanie Nelson from Beyond the Yellow Ribbons. Sergeant Nelson, what's in the mailbag today?
Hi, Tom. Well, this letter comes from Sandy. Sandy writes, I've got a whole community involved in making care packages for troops. We've got 32 completely boxed up. Where do I send them?
Melanie, I'll bet you get that question more than just once.
Tom, this does happen a lot. And these are the letters that that really give me my heart warmth, but my head a little bit of a headache, because we at Beyond the Yellow Ribbon don't have addresses of service members that we can hand out to people who do great things like this. Since 9/11, we haven't been able to hand out addresses of service members deployed. None of the armed services have, to protect our families and our service members here at home. So what I really encourage people like Sandy to do before she gets her whole community involved in making 32 care packages, to contact us first and go through and find the family support, find what they need. And that's the first thing to do, to go to the Family Assistance Center and find out what you can do that's really, really needed. But now here, Sandy has these 32 boxes, so we're going to help her do something with them. Call that Family Assistance Center. If you go on beyondtheyellowribbon.org, you'll see, you type in Family Assistance Center or go to Family and Wellness and grab all the numbers. There's several different centers around the state. Or you can contact your local Yellow Ribbon Network or your church. Perhaps they already are clued into some families with service members deployed, and they might be able to share that address with you. Finally, go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and click on the Make a Difference button. And there we link out to several organizations, both in our state and nationwide, that do send care packages to service members all the time, and they have addresses that are submitted to them. You can even Google to find out more of those type organizations.
Melanie, we've talked about this before, but there are a lot of well-meaning people out there that just start doing something before they contact you. And as I understand it, you can't send anonymous boxes, and there are rules on what you can and can't do. So the real important thing for people to know is to contact Beyond the Yellow Ribbon before they start.
You got it, Tom. We would love that because, for example, there might be a need that we really have that you could fulfill, or maybe one of our families has a need that your community could package something up for a family locally, because the service member is really taken care of during their deployment. I mean, they love the good thoughts, they love the good wishes, but when you ask that service member, what can I do to support you while you're deployed, they are going to say, take care of my family.
And that's where the Yellow Ribbon communities come in.
Yeah, you got it, the Yellow Ribbon Networks. And to find out if your community is a Yellow Ribbon Network or working toward it, just call that Family Assistance Center. Go to our website and find your local Family Assistance Center, and they know what towns are already working. And if you want to start your town down the path of becoming Yellow Ribbon, they'll help you in that project as well.
And your website one more time?
BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org.
Thank you, Sergeant Nelson.
Thank you, Tom.
If you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. We're just about out of time, but before we go, we'd like to mention that Craigens Resort in Brainerd is having their second annual Family Fun Days Military Appreciation Event, May 29th through the 31st. It will include many great activities for veterans and their families. Find out more on our Facebook page or at Craigens.com. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Minnesota Military Radio Hour. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Major Paul Rickard from the 1st Brigade of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, Marge Oslin from the Fisher House at the Minneapolis VA Hospital, Commissioner Larry Shelladeau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesotans Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the mental health of today's service members and Minnesota State Cemetery at Camp Ripley. That's next Sunday morning at 7 right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. Also, please make sure to join us from 6 to 9 a.m. on Memorial Day, May 30th, for a live show right here on News Talk 100.3 FM. We'll bring you up to date on everything you need to know about Memorial Day. If you have questions for our mailbag, Or if you want to check out a podcast of today's show and all our shows, visit us on Facebook and at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Hour with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm located in Minneapolis. He's also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force. We hope you found this program to be informative and entertaining. This has been a production of KTLK, Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. Podcasts of this program are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. Thanks for listening.